This week on the Commander Clash podcast, we're talking about the weirdest and most confusing cards that you could put in your Commander decks. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we're talking about cards that are super weird and confusing, and some of them might be kind of bad, but some of them might have some uses in Commander. And joining me to talk about these weird cards, we got Krim, who's chewing some almonds up there. We got Phil, who just finished chugging his water. And then Tomer, who's sitting there quietly. How is everyone doing today?
I can chug these almonds if you want.
That was an impressive sneeze, actually, Phil. I'm glad you muted that.
No, I didn't. It didn't come out, but I really had to. I bet it, whatever. Don't just audio listeners only, please, for this.
So today, as I mentioned, we're talking about weird cards, and this should be really fun because we have a pretty good list of cards that are very, very strange. And I'm going to be curious if we can come up with some ways to use these cards in Commander. Some of them I've seen before, some of them I've never seen before. But before we get into that, we got some sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and head over to FoilArmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So we recently did an AMA from MagicCon Vegas, and our top comment comes from Vesuvius007, who says, losing only $40 in Vegas is basically winning. I think that was in reference to Morgan's adventure on the town where someone gave him $100 to gamble and he lost 40 of it and came away a winner, I guess, which in Vegas, I think that is true. If you come home from Vegas only down $40, you did pretty well.
How did you do?
Terrible EV, guys. That's so bad.
This year actually did okay. I think there's been, out of all my years in Vegas, 2 years I have come back without losing money. And this was one of them. So I'll take that as a win.
We're on the up and up. All right.
We're on the up. We're doing it. I mean, it helped. It depends on if you count Magic stuff. Like getting the alpha cards from Pack It Up was definitely like some sweet EV plus EV that
That's
I wasn't expecting. So yeah.
But if you had that win.
Congrats.
Yeah. So pick two champion of Pack It Up Vegas. So anyway, let's talk some weird Magic cards. And this should be interesting. So let's start with a classically weird, confusing card that I'm curious why we don't play this card, because I know some of us really hate on extra card draw effects. And this card is Chain of Mephistopheles, an old Legends enchantment. And this card says, if a player would draw a card, except for the first one they draw during their draw steps each turn, that player discards a card instead. If a player discards a card this way, they draw a card. If a player doesn't discard a card this way, they put the top card of their library into their graveyard. So first, do any of you understand what Chain of Mephistopheles does? I've seen some flow charts that people have made where you got like branches going everywhere trying to explain, like, if you do this, then this happens. I think it's as simple as, like, if you draw an extra card, instead you essentially rummage. Instead, you're going to discard a card and then you're going to draw a card. And if you don't have any cards in hand, so you can't discard a card, then for some reason you have to mill a card. I don't know why, but for some reason you got to mill a card. Does that sound right?
Well, it would stop you from, because if you can't discard anything, then you draw. So you'd be like, oh, I'm empty-handed, so I get to just draw, right? And then it's like, no.
You get around
the downs.
You're
still punished.
No. You get milled.
I think Seth just described it correctly. It's,
yeah.
4 years now, we read this card, and every time it's, I can't tell you what it does, but I think I got it now. Let's wait till the next time it shows up in any episode or context podcast, and I don't know what it does.
I always, like, it sees It's like sees Fringe play in what, Vintage? Maybe Legacy? I'm not quite
very,
sure.
Very, very Fringe, like, but yeah.
It's just like very wordy very wordy draw hate, right? Like it doesn't, if you're drawing extra cards, this is like, no, instead you're going to rummage instead. Or I guess it sets up graveyard stuff too. In a weird way.
Yeah, it weirdly sets up graveyard stuff because this does apply to everyone. So you also can't draw extra cards, which maybe that's the reason. I was going to ask you, Krim, because you're always getting me with Notion Thieves and Narsets, and you love those cards. Do you ever play this as card draw hate? Discounting the fact that it's like $1,500 because it's Legends and Reserve List. But, but do you ever, is this a card you would play as card draw hate, or is being symmetrical kind of a deal breaker?
Symmetrical kind of a deal breaker. Too fair. Cards too balanced. And on top of that,
balance.
I always get the simplified version of what Chains does.
Yeah.
And then immediately forget. So rather than have to read that card, even if I own said $1,500 cards, this is going to be for my mental health here. I'm just excluding this from my deck so I don't have to read them. You got to remember, okay? Yeah. I play Chromatic Lantern so I don't have to think about how I tap my lands. Why in the world would I have like Chains of Mephistopheles?
You got to break out the flow chart.
It's definitely a weird card, and it's one that I would not normally think about because, first of all, the wording, and second of all, the price. But like, if you think about it, it basically forces everybody to discard and then draw. So if you have discard synergies, which is like a pretty fairly popular black archetype, this is kind of pretty okay. If you really like seeing everybody discard, then you could do some stuff with it. As long as not whenever you discard, you draw a card, because that will still not work for you that well unless you want stuff in the graveyard. But like, I guess you could pop off of like the Gitrog monster, you know? It's like, I draw a card, I discard a land. Oh, I draw a land. Oh, I'm going to discard a land. Oh, I draw a land. And you just keep going through your entire deck. Turgrid. Like when Turgrid wants everybody to discard, because then when you discard with Turgrid on the battlefield, Turgrid gets that thing. So it's like, I don't care if I'm not drawing. I mean, I'm just going to get free stuff on the permanents and beat you with that.
There's got to be combos with this, right? Like, it works if you have an effect that says when you discard a card, draw a card, and then you mill your deck and die because you draw through your deck.
I think the easiest is just to get Rock Monster with Dockmoor Salvage, right? Like you.
That would be the easiest
the Dockmoor Salvage. You dredge the salvage back
finally
up.
Broke.
And then you broke discard the Gitrog. And mess it off. And do it again. Yeah.
Dockmoor Salvage and Gitrog. Yeah.
There's probably a way to do it with Bone Miser. Do you remember that card that like benefits when you discard? So I am sure there's some combos. I don't know if they're good combos.
Wait, that's
but
when you discard, you draw, and then it's like, I go through my deck.
That's Waste Knot, and then also Bone Miser.
Bone Miser's for yourself, but Waste Knot.
No, Bone
Miser's
your opponent.
That's the one that's for yourself, and then Waste Knot's the one for your opponents, but. Anyway, I mean, being $1,500 means we're probably not going to see this very often, but there are ways you could use this card. Let's move on to a fun one. This one we've seen before, and this is one of my favorite weird bad commander cards, and I'm curious if you guys have ever had any success with this card, and that card is Spy Kit. So it's a 2-mana equipment, and it says equipped creature gets +1/+1, and whatever, but then it has all the names of all non-legendary creature cards in existence, in addition to its name. So this card, I think, got a little worse once everything became legendary, because it doesn't get all the legendary names for some of the hot new synergies. But still having every name is crazy. Tomer, have you ever built a deck around this card?
I did. I played it on Commander Clash, and I talked about it on YouTube many moons ago. But it was funny because somebody actually asked me about it fairly recently. Like, they were asking for suggestions on stuff, and I mentioned Spy Kit, and then sure enough, we have this podcast to talk about it again. So the thing that I like doing about it is I pair it with Arden because I'm an evil person. Arden says you can equip your equipment to something, to any creature, like once at the beginning of combat or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing is it doesn't just target your own creatures. So you could target your opponent's creatures, equip it with Spy Kit, and then you hit them with something like Eradicate, where you exile a creature, and then you search that person's library and hand and everything for all creatures with the same name as it, and they all get exiled. So now that the creature has all names, you exile all the creatures from their deck. But there's like a lot of really cute like synergy stuff. You don't have to go that evil. You could just do stuff to benefit yourself.
I gotta say, that's two unplayable cards otherwise. So if you manage to pull it off, I think that one's fine. Like if you play like the Ant and Spike it in your commander deck, I think you owe it a little W if you pull it off.
I mean, there are a bunch of, I also built a deck around this at one point, and I found out there are a ton of like weird synergies for giving all of your, giving your creature every single name. You can do some funny stuff, but none of it felt especially powerful to me. It felt more like cute and funny than like good. Was that kind of your experience, Tomer, that you knew a lot of like cool things, but it's not actually like that strong of a card?
It's not like you're getting massive value out of this thing. There are some cool things, like there's Verdant Succession. Whenever a green non-token creature is put into the graveyard from play, that creature's controller may search your library for a card with the same name as that creature and put it onto the battlefield. But then you still need to have a green creature, it still needs to die, and it's like all these extra steps, and like, funny.
One of my favorite ones was Bazaar of Wonders, which is this 5-mana enchantment that says, whenever a spell is played, counter it if a card with the same name is in player in the graveyard. But that was one, it just sounded so funny, right? You play your thing, you would give it all names, you counter all your opponent's creatures, but then legends get around it. I was very sad that everyone could still just like play their commanders and play their spicy new legends. Like, oh, this actually only counters like your mana dorks or something. Like it wasn't actually as good as I was hoping it would be. What about you, Phil or Krim? Have either of you guys messed around with Spy Kid at all?
I didn't play it yet. I sometimes think about it whenever I see a card. Like last time, I think, was March of Burgeoning Life, the green march that references card names. And then in Commander, there's only one card that allows you to play a card's name twice unless the card explicitly states it. So sometimes I think about it. I have not built around it yet.
Yeah, no. I have not tried this at all. Like, there's no world where...
Come on.
The work that I've got to go through to make this, like, playable has just not cut it for me.
Not worth it.
It is really funny, though, like, that combo that Tomer mentioned. Yeah. That's, like, hilarious. I love that.
Yeah, the synergies are sweet. But anyway, let's keep moving on. And next up, we have an entire mechanic. And that is the mutate mechanic. Mutate, infamously one of the weirdest mechanics in existence. So if you don't know mutate, for example, we're going to use a Nethroi Apex of Death as an example. It's a 5-mana 5/5, can't Nightmare Beast, it's a legend, and you can mutate it for 7 mana. And mutate says, if you cast this spell for its mutate cost, put it over or under target non-human creature you own. They mutate into a creature on top, they mutate into the creature on top plus all abilities from under it. So essentially, if you mutate a creature onto a creature, it's going to have the stats of the creature on the top, but you still get all the abilities of the thing that it mutated onto. Mutate. Have you guys played any mutate decks?
Yes. I mean, it was in standard. It was disappointing though, right? They promised like Godzilla and huge things, and then you mutate things and they keep one creature's power.
Yeah, that was
so sad. Cool mechanic though. It is kind of sad that no thing grants mutate to all non-humans, which I asked a Wizards designer about, and they said they couldn't because this would lead to things that don't work with the rules. I think like star creatures or something were a problem. And then they just couldn't do it. I don't know. That's all kind of speculation, but the more you think about it, it's probably good that we can combine all creatures in Magic. Would be fun though, and it would
bad
be on this list.
Happen. Yes.
the coolest thing mutate does, I think it's way too complicated for what it actually does. But there is like I want this as a bucket list thing. I'm going to tell you now because it's very funny and I'm sure you'll just forget because I'm going to try and do it on Commander Clash. But it is possible with Mutate to put your entire deck into the command zone.
Yep. I remember
and
this.
I won't explain how because I want it to be a surprise. Maybe the comment section knows this little one. I think it was Max Makes Magic. Did a video on it like in 2019 or something like that, or even older, and he showed how to do it, and it was just wild.
It is a very long process from what I remember. You have to do a lot of things with a lot of like very specific cards, but it is hilarious that you can actually end up doing that. Yeah. I've seen some interesting mutate decks. I think of like Aluna Apex of Wishes, which is the one that when it mutates, you exile cards from the top of your library and take it in non-land permanent, then you put it onto the battlefield in your hand. I think there's some ways that you can build like decks with almost all lands, and then you control that Aluna is going to like spin into what you want because it's going to hit a non-land permanent. And
it's omniscience.
It's omniscience. Yeah, I know. It's always omniscience, but it is a sweet mechanic. Krim, I imagine you played with it in standard. Do you remember those decks where you just try to make like a big pile of mutate things, and then your opponent casts a removal spell and you scoop?
Or they, even better, they just bounce it and then sick. Like
it's cool.
Poliwog
was the two drop that made him cheaper to mutate, and you'd mutate on it.
Mutate onto that, and like I remember, Dirgebat? I was like, this has to be like at some point playable, right? Like this is kind of cool. And yeah, like no matter what I did, it was all bad. The only I think mutate cards that were good were Gemrazor. And the one that ramps and the teamer one that you were talking about that essentially just discovered, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, those were just very fun mechanics to play with, though. I thought it was very cool. I realized when I had to explain to a friend who was playing the Sultai teamer deck how that works. it was in that moment that I'm like, oh, yeah, this is like very much so not new player friendly whatsoever.
There are just so many weird edge cases too, but go ahead, Dover.
Have you ever just seen just like a random mutate card played for value, like in Commander? Like I've seen people like run like Parcel Beast, for example, not in a mutate deck or anything. They just run Parcel Beast. It just has a mutate cost of 2 and you can pay 1, tap it, look at the top card of your library. If it's a land card, you put it onto the battlefield. If you don't, you put it into your hand. So it's like for 2 mana, you get to have a Coiling Oracle that you can activate every single turn. It still feels bad when the creature dies, but
I think Octopus might be the other one that's C-dasher. It's like a Curious Obsession essentially. Like it's 2 mana to mutate and it has flash and it says when it deals combat damage, draw a card. So it's kind of like a 2 mana aura almost. So you can like put on your thing and start drawing cards. So that one I think I've seen before. Are there any other ones?
Sawtusk Demolisher is kind of land destruction. And then I did see Gem Razors, right? Yeah.
Yep.
The artifact enchantment destruction one when you mutate. Problem with it
but
is
then these
like,
just became aura creatures, right? Like became bestow without the enchantment type.
Kinda. And the problem is a lot of them trigger when you mutate. So it kind of incentivizes you to play a bunch together because then the more times you mutate, the more times you get the ability. So I think that's part of the reason why we don't see them as standalone cards that much. Last question on mutate before we move on. Do you think they'll ever bring this back? Or is this like just too weird and they'll just never make more mutate cards again? Do you think we'll get another mutate set?
I hope we do. I honestly hope we do. I think it'd be really cool, right? I think they played it safe with a lot of the designs as well. Like Dirgebat, why is its mutate 6 mana instead of like, you know, it's 4 to flash in, right? I think there's some really cool things they could have done here. I would personally like to see it again, but I have to imagine, no, we're not going to see it. It's so much work and so complicated to only have your stack blown up, and then it's like, okay, none of that mattered.
Yeah, I feel like it's not worth it just because, especially with like so many sets coming out and like so many new mechanics coming out every single year, I feel like it would be just better for people's brains. To keep things a little bit simpler.
Funny that you mentioned that, Tomer, because I feel like, okay, so we had Warp, which is an updated Evoke, right? Like a better, lot of the old mechanics, they've just gone back and made better versions of it.
Mega Mutate.
I am curious, right? Like, are they going to eventually maybe, what does a better version of Mutate look like?
Isn't it just Bestow, though? Like, Bestow is a better version of it. It's simpler. You don't feel as bad when the creature goes away because you always get the creature that became the aura anyway. Yeah. And then they just made a worse Bestow.
Just add power and toughness. I don't know why this wasn't... Like, it is just Bestow unless you... Why don't they add power and toughness?
This is more complicated Bestow, so no?
It'll probably be worse. Like Earthbend, right? Or like Bestow. Like, if you want to fix it, you make it so, like, if your thing gets killed, the top thing dies, but the other stuff just goes into play. Like, that... I do imagine, like, I don't think they bring it back soon, but like 15 years from now, there will be a Mark Rosewater, like one of his teaser articles for a set where it's like, oh, we bring back some horrible old mechanic and we fix it this time. And it's going to be
his companion.
You
know?
Oh my gosh.
let's keep moving on to a more perplexing card in a perplexing Chimera. A 5-3-3. I almost said it right on accident. It's a 5-3-3. Whenever your opponent casts a spell, you may exchange control of it and that spell. If you do, you can choose new targets for the spell. I'm curious, is this just a chaos card? Like, do you just play this because it's funny, because it's a chaos card? Or is there any, like, building around this? Because I've played it in decks before, because it's funny and it's interesting, but, like, are there uses for this card? Or do you just play it and, like, oh, weird things will happen once I play it?
What? Weird things will happen. I just play it. No synergy is needed. Yet.
This is why funny and Krim are different. We are similar but different. This is not a chaos card, my friend. This is a Zedru staple. You play it in Zedru. Zedru rewards you for having stuff, your permanents beyond other opponent's stuff. So you just swap it around.
Maybe Zedru's a chaos deck, Homer.
Yeah, have you considered that Zedru's
a chaos deck and you just don't want to admit it?
It's not. It is controlled randomness, you know, it's okay. itty bitty randomness.
Google, give me some synonyms for randomness.
There's no Scrambleverse. There was a Scrambleverse, but then I took it out. But like,
there was a Scrambleverse.
It was 2011. Okay, it was 2011. It was a different time.
Oh, so
my playgroup
was
explicitly running like Jokel Hops and stuff.
Oh,
and yeah, obviously I ran Scrambleverse. It was the Wild West out there. Okay, and then I. Then I realized the chaos not fun, and I dialed it back. But perplexing chimera, not chaos.
I'm not above just throwing this in a deck to see what happens. Yeah. Like I think it's kind of entertaining. Chaotic.
It is funny, yeah. And I wish there was a like Homeward Path would return both things back to you. I guess for spells, it doesn't matter, right? It's any spell.
Yeah, if you swap a spell.
So if you just steal instant sorceries with this and then Homeward Path it back, that's. It's an engine.
That's what I do. Or you blink it.
Blinking, yeah, like Charming Prince or something.
Yeah,
I remember playing this a bunch.
What's the fun in that?
Commander Clash, but then I forgot about it.
Yeah,
I used to play this quite a bit too. It happen.
Yeah, just see what happens. It just adds a little controlled randomness to your game, your games, light
or whatever.
Controlled
randomness.
Yeah, whatever Tomer said.
It's a little chaotic, but not a lot. You know, just a little. It's fine.
Oh, all right. That's an easy one. Let's move on to this next one. I'm curious if you guys have ever found a use for this card. Eon Engine, 5-mana artifact. It enters tapped. You can tap it, exile it, and you reverse the game's turn order. I think this is the only card in Magic that reverses the game's turn order. What are the uses for this card? So I've been trying to figure out, like, what would I do with this? The best I've come up with is you take your turn, and then you pass to the person next to you, and then, like, during their turn, you activate it, so it goes back to you next, and it's, like, kind of like you took a bad extra turn,
extra
sort
turn.
Of. Like, you took an extra turn by giving someone a turn in between, kind of. Like, is that all you do with this?
I mean, when it's the metal bending Toph is the real tech with this. There's the Naya Toph that says your artifacts are lanes, I believe. All your non-token artifacts are lanes. Then you get to Earthbend. So you Earthbend the Aeon Engine, and then you crack it on your opponent's turn, and then you take the next turn, and then you Earthbend it again. And then you crack it.
That's
so
fun. You can make the one person that's across from you never get a turn, right? It just goes back and forth to the two people next to you. So it's like one person doesn't get to ever play again.
And you get more turns out of this entire process, right? Like you get more turns than everybody else at the table, which is evil.
Every second turn is your turn, basically.
Yep. Yeah.
Gotta shout out hilarious. The flavor text here. Paradox? We were worried about that yesterday. That is such a cool quote.
If any of you guys actually put this in a deck, anyone?
No.
I've
never once played
with
this. I know you could do funny stuff with it, but I've never once played with this, right? Because you could easily just like keep doing loops with this, just like Tomer had mentioned.
Yeah, easily. Not easily.
Someone's
going to
feel
excess.
Real bad about it.
Yes.
I would
definitely
jam this in Commander Clash, though. This is an entertaining card, you know?
Oh, man. The person next to you gets screwed, though, right? Yeah. If you just do this. Oh.
Yeah, it is funny that it punishes seat order more than anything. Yeah. Like, if you just happen to be in the unlucky seat, you just get super wrecked if someone does it.
Maybe it's a fixed seat disparity. The person in last gets an A on engine.
You just, yeah, you just start just with start an emblem of an engine. Yeah. All right. Next up, we got another mechanic. We had two mechanics on our list. This one, I feel like the idea of this mechanic is cool, but my God, is it so hard to use. It's the assist mechanic. So the assist mechanic was printed for multiplayer way back in Battlebond, I want to say. An assist lets another player pay part of your spell's mana cost. So, for example, play the game, a 6-mana sorcery that says exile all 9 land permanents, but it says assist, another player can pay up to 6 of this spell's mana cost. So you got to pay the colored mana, someone else can chip in. The problem I have with this card, in this mechanic, is I'm really not sure how you're supposed to use it. Do you guys know, like, the proper way to play this card? Because what do I reveal the card to the table and be like, hey guys, I got an assist card, would you like to help me pay some mana for it? Like,
yes.
It was made for 2v2. Battlebond was a 2v2 format. So,
oh,
yeah.
Right. It was supposed to be like 2 and a giant, and then they canceled it.
The intent of this card is your partner, your ally, will be, okay, we need to wipe the board. I have a board wipe, but I only have 6 mana. You chip in the last 2 mana, and then you have the rest of your mana to deploy on that turn, right?
Don't you remember, Seth? You helped me pay for my 6-mana wizard.
That's because I just wanted to see it
work. Oh, yeah, we did play 2v2, right? We did like a 2v2
class. That was just in a random commander game. Oh, yeah. I just was a good guy for some reason, yeah. I don't even remember why.
It was like a silly art week, and he was T-posing. It was so expensive. I needed Seth's.
The T-pose deck.
They are all overcosted because they figure you're going to get someone else to help you play them. So I guess you're right that they were designed for team play. Do you think team play will ever be a thing in Commander? That seems like a natural direction to go, right? Play more two-headed giant style games? Like, do you think sometime this could be in demand because we start playing team Commander?
I would love that so much more. Mm-hmm. I also think it's... Every single time I see team play, it's usually like at Magic Cons or like special pre-release events where you're playing like Commander-esque or you're playing like pre-release sealed, but then you go 2v2. And I always found that really much more approachable for newer players because let's say you're like a little bit less, you know the format a little bit less or you're newer to Magic, you can go with somebody who is more experienced than you and be in their team and they can help you through the turn a little bit more. And I always found that so wonderful whenever I saw it actually being performed. And from what I heard from anecdotal experience, obviously small sample size, but it always seemed like very well received. So I would love to see that being explored more in Commander, where instead of free-for-all, maybe we have more team play, and maybe a set that is focused on that. That would be sick.
It seems like the perfect way to teach someone the game, right? Like having a teammate who knows what they're doing is like the perfect way to help teach a brand new player how to pick up the game.
I still think it's just 1v1, but yeah, it's fair.
We need to trick the commander players to play 1v1 crim, so we gotta go to teams, and then we're like, well, you know how your teammate sucks all the time? Try 1v1. It's this brand
and then
new
you beat up
format.
Your teammate.
And then we have to put standard players. Standard.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's the
it's
pathway.
Like commander, but you don't have a commander, and it's faster, and you can play it on the toilet.
And you have to worry about what happens if you don't have something to do, whereas commander gives you something to always do.
Yeah. Phil, before we move on, I got to ask you, is there any argument for playing these cards in normal Commander, or are they just too expensive and too hard to use because you got to try to beg someone to help you pay the mana cost?
I don't know, actually. So let's say play of the game is probably one of the, so exile all non-land permanents. There's probably people who would want to chip in, even if you, like, you say, hey, sorry, I only have 4 mana. Maybe you even bully them into paying for, like, play a spell, and then, whoa, I have 4 mana left. Does anybody want to put in the other 4, like, 2 other players, and then wreck 1 person? I have no idea if this works. So it sounds like a Richard play, actually. Just
it
spend
does,
all
yeah.
the 2
it's
mana.
It's like a crim deck to Richard. Do priority bullying, mana bullying.
Hey,
I'll only wipe the board if you put in 6 of the mana. Yep. I'll only contribute 2. If not, we all go down together.
Hey, it works though, right?
So it says,
I will rather die.
Good for bullying your friends, basically, is the main upside of this mechanic. Mana bullying. If you want a mana bullying, play some assist cards. All right, let's move on to a card that Tomer, I know you wanted this on the list, and I've been waiting for this because I think this card's horrible, but maybe there's uses I've missed. And this card is iconically bad land Sorrow's Path from the Dark. So Sorrow's Path, it's a land that does not make any mana. And then it says, tap, choose to target blocking creatures and opponent controls. If each of those key creatures could block all creatures that the other is blocking, remove them both from combat. Each one then blocks all creatures the other was blocking. And then when it becomes tapped, it deals 2 damage to you and each creature you control. So essentially, if I understand this right, you can switch to blockers as long as the blocks are legal, but you have to pyroclasm yourself and shock your face to do it?
Yes.
Okay.
No, isn't that cool?
Yes.
It is an incredibly confusing text. And we were going to leave it off this list, but I'm like, guys, it's actually playable. It's not just the worst land ever. It's gotten better. Like fine wine, it gets better with age, okay? So the tap thing, you just read it out. I still don't understand it. Ignore that. What do you do, okay, is you add either Urborg or Yavimaya, which allows it to tap for a color, okay? And then we care about the last bit, which is much easier to understand. Whenever it's tapped, it deals 2 damage to you and each creature you control, which is wonderful, okay? Because there's an enrage mechanic. So there's dinosaurs, okay? Dinosaurs are usually very boring these days because they had a really cool mechanic called enrage, and they decided not to use it anymore. And now dinosaurs are just boring versions, discount bulk bin dragons without wings, and they suck. But they had so much potential with enrage. Enrage is basically whenever this creature takes damage, you get something good. There's like ranging raptors and rampant gross you. You ramp out stuff. There's other ones that like each opponent has to sacrifice a non-land permanent, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, so enrage, really good. I was running it in recently, what was it? I played Raphael Ninja Destroyer, which doesn't have the enrage mechanic, but oh, it does actually have the enrage mechanic. But whenever it's dealt damage, you add that much red mana. Like, that's sick. And he's a 4-4, so he survives Sora's Path. Like, it's sick.
You run with, like, taps Darien, for mana and you make if you get mana from that. Yeah.
yeah. It's good. It's so good.
I mean, guys,
it's actually legit. It's legit.
Okay,
don't buy it out, please, speculators. Don't be crazy, but like,
it is reserve list, and it costs $10. Wow, it's $10. My God, it's $10 for a Sorrow's Path. What is happening?
When I say something's good, just remember it means.
I think we're safe on this one, Tomer. If people actually buy out Sorrow's Path,
it is pricey for what it is.
I could see the uses of the card, right? I could see that in an enrage deck, it's kind of cute, but I feel like, even in the Enrage deck, you pretty much have to have the Yavimaya Urborg, right? Or, like, if this isn't making mana, it's got to be so bad. Like, it's just lands that don't make mana are such a tough sell.
You have a bunch of creatures that must be blocked. Raphael, for example, must be blocked, okay? But then, if you have other creatures that also must be blocked, oh, baby, then you start cooking. Then you can start swapping them around, and they're like, oh, no. No good blocks, but I must block, and I just get blown out.
I want to see someone win with Blood Artists. I want to see someone stack up like a bunch of Blood Artists and 1/1 tokens and then tap it to pyroclasm themselves and win with the triggers. That would actually be pretty sick. Wait, okay.
Then you can no longer even attack into them because they'll be like, oh, I have 2 blockers.
Oh, exchange the blockers. Yeah.
Good luck with that. I'm going to activate Sorrow's Path and you lose.
You might have convinced me that I want to play Sorrow's Path now, Tomer. We might need to do a Sorrow's Path week on Commander Clash and so you can build the coolest Sorrow's Path deck.
S tier. Like, there's a weird dragon thing. And there's a bridge, and I feel like everybody on the bridge is confused. The wizard battle in the forefront is confusing. It's about as confusing as the text, honestly.
I think they were trying to represent the text in the art, and they nailed it. They nailed it. The confusion level is dead on.
I want to see the art description or the art prompt. It's like just like an essay that is indecipherable, and they're like, ah.
Yeah. All right, let's move on from Sorrow's Path to one of the weirdest mythic creatures they've ever made in Mirror Mad Phantasm. So this is a 5-mana, 5/1 flying spirit creature token. It says, pay one and a blue. Mirror Mad Phantasm's owner shuffles it into his or her library. If that player does, he or she reveals cards from the top of the library until a card named Mirror Mad Phantasm is revealed. That player puts the card into the puts that card onto the battlefield and all the other cards revealed this way into his or her graveyard. So essentially, if you can get this on the battlefield and pay two in Commander, since you only play one copy, it'll go back in your deck and you'll mill until you hit it again and put it back into play.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys play this card? It seems like it could be a very efficient or like fast way to fill your graveyard. If all you care about is how many cards can I get into my graveyard as quickly as possible, is this card not actually kind of good at that job?
It's a repeatable traumatize at instant speed.
Oh,
statistical.
Like my Lazav decks love this, especially Multifarious or whatever, because that one, like when you mill tons of cards into your yard, you now have your whole yard at your disposal, right? Obviously, you know, be prepared that if you mill a little too much, because you never know, right? If you get real unlucky, you know,
it could be the bottom card of your deck. And, yeah. Then you're just kind of done.
So yeah, you gotta be careful when you fire it off. But there's a lot of fun things you can do here with self mill, and like any lab man win condition will also have a fun time with this as well.
I
remember playing
my...
this somewhere. I don't know where though. Maybe I. So what happens if you mutate on this, and then I guess you shuffle the creature.
I think
that's
you
made.
Shuffle your entire deck.
There's
got
to be a way.
I don't
to
think you get back to mutate afterwards. Sure. I don't even know anymore.
I think you only get the mutate thing. Wait. Oh my god. I don't know. Actually, whatever. I remember playing it once. It was probably some self-mill deck, maybe, like, whatever. It's 5 mana, sadly, so it's not that efficient. Once it's on the board, it is very efficient, but... Ugh.
It's also worth mentioning that I believe in Commander, if you clone it, you would just mill your entire deck if you activated the clone, right? Because the clone wouldn't have the name in the deck. So then you would just activate this, mill your entire deck, and, like, Labman win or Thoracle win or whatever.
I used to have this in my, like, this is a long time ago, but I had it in my Thraxamundar deck, which is a zombie deck, and I wanted to self-mill because I had a bunch of, like, mastery animation, like Patriarch's Bidding and stuff in my zombies, and I remember when I took it out, I activated it, it was the bottom card of my library, and I died. And then I played it again, I activated it 3 times, it was the top card, then it was 3rd from the top. And then it was literally the last card in my library, and I died again. And then I'm like, all right. I get statistics. I get this could happen, and on average, you should be getting half. But after that string of bad luck, I was like, you know what? I'll find other ways to mill.
That is so unlucky. My God. Wow, you have the worst luck, Tomer. Didn't you stop playing Chaos Warp for a long time because your luck was so bad with it? You have some bad luck in Commander.
I'm back on Chaos Warp, though. I'm so bad at it still. I am still horrifically bad at resolving Chaos Warps. Everybody always benefits from when I target them. But I've realized that it is entertaining. So you know what? Maybe I should bring back Mirror Mad Phantasm because you can see how bad I am with it.
Hey. Yeah, having it be the bottom card of your library would actually be hilarious on a Clash episode. So I will be rooting for the low roll just for the entertainment. All right, let's keep moving on. Next up, we have a card I love. And I'm curious why we don't play this, because I feel like this actually should just be a green staple in Commander, but no one plays it. And that's Panglacial Worm. So Panglacial Worm. It's a 7-mana, 9/5 trampling worm. And it says, while you're searching your library, you may pay playing Glacial Worm from your library. So essentially, you crack a fetch, you're looking for your land, you'll be like, huh, 7-mana, Panglacial Worm, or a Nature's Lore, or a Rampant Growth. Is this not just worth, like, you're playing green, you're playing all these Rampant Growths, you're playing all these fetch lands, you have tons of ways to search your library, you make a ton of mana. Wouldn't this just be worth playing? Like, You can even do it at instant speed. If you search your library during your opponent's turn, you can get it on the end step and smash your opponent for 9. And it's a 9/5 trampler. Why do we not pay Pangation Worm? This card kind of seems like gas to me.
It's still 7 mana, right?
It's well, just yeah, a 9/5. But
it's a 7 mana 9/5 trample. Like, it's funny.
Yeah.
It's like very funny because it's, you know, everybody says the meme when you crack or search, haha, Pangation Worm.
Yep.
So, it would be now meta to actually be like, yes, actually.
Actually,
Pangation
yes.
Worm.
Hang on a minute.
Wait, does this mean life. If I fetch on your turn, I could play it then?
Yes.
So it has pseudo flash,
as
right?
As long as you search the library, you can play it no matter what time you search. Yep.
It's time.
It's ready. It is funny for the memes, but yeah, like I would run it on Clash, but like, so it was actually, I would consider it was good long ago, back when one of the very best draw spells in green was still Harmonize. Like that was like the top tier, and then you had to scrounge around for other options to draw cards in green. Because green was always, even in the early days of like Commander EDH, it was always easy to make a lot of mana green. But then the problem was like, how do we draw the cards? And there were a couple really good options, but then it fell off a cliff after that. Pangalacrinal Worm though, instant speed, 9/5, trample when you crack a fetch or whatever. That's legitimate, you know, like that's something when you're empty handed, you got the mana, you got to do something with it. Why not 9/5 trampler at instant speed?
Doesn't it mean you're like Nature's Growth or Rampant Growth technically draws you a card if you really think about it? It's just drawing you a Pangalacrinal Worm, but like, think of how busted Rampant Growth that draws
sorcery.
You a card is.
That's sorcery. That's
9
speed.
Mana.
You gotta do it at instant speed.
I mean, if you're empty handed, do you top deck a Rampant Growth or whatever? I mean, and you have a lot of mana available, that feels better, you know?
I need to acquire some Pangalacrinal Worms. I want to just
so
play
funny.
This for the fun of it.
But like, it is funny.
Can you imagine just getting somebody, something. Ambushing them with a Pangalacrinal Worm? I would never be able to attack you ever again if you're like, oh, I have 9 untapped green mana or something. I'm like, well,
that's crap. It's also basically a ghostly prison. Once people know that you're the kind of person who plays Pangation Worm, they can never attack you. This card just keeps getting better the more we talk about it.
You have to hold up 7 green mana, which you make fun of me for Ink Shield, and then you're like, but Pangation Worm.
Wait, if you crack a fetch, you don't have the mana, right?
Right, yeah, so you need 8 technically. Yeah, because you don't have the land from the fetch.
Yep.
I mean, I think it's actually
But Ink Shield's not playable, but Pangalacrinal Worm, though.
I mean,
think about
it. Come on.
The problem with the card is you're going to draw it sometimes, and if it's not coming from your deck, then it's very bad, because if it's in your hand, you almost never want to spend 7 mana for a Pangalacrinal Worm.
I think I know the perfect deck for this card.
Ooh, maybe what's the deck, Grim? Or is it a surprise?
Like, you play in the Henzi or something.
My favorite.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 9 power is good.
It's a 9/5,
right?
Well, I could just sack it at the very least for 7 cards.
Yeah. You could get a refund.
All right, let's move on to a card, oh my God, that we saw in Commander Clash recently. I'm still having nightmares about this game. No. Time Sifter. No. It's a 5-mana artifact that is not banned in Commander for some reason.
Yeah.
It says at the beginning of each player's upkeep, each player removes the top card of his or her library from the game. The player removed the card with the highest mana value takes an extra turn after this one. If 2 or more players are tied, the tied players repeat the process until the tie is broken. So essentially, whoever's got the most expensive card on the top of their deck gets an extra turn. When we played this, I don't remember. We had so many of them going. I don't think I took a single extra turn. It was basically Seth doesn't play anymore. I think who played all the turns? It was like a couple people played all the turns. It was Tomer.
This is what happened as a quick recap. Morgan played Time Sifter.
Mm-hmm.
And then Krim was like, you know what's better than one Time Sifter? 9 of them. And he played Mirror Maid or something, which turns all his non-land permanents into a copy of one target permanent. So he turned all his non-land permanents into Time Sifters, and now suddenly we had 9 Time Sifters, and every single time all 9 Time Sifters triggered, we would have to track who won every single one, because, you know, typically speaking, you only need to track whoever's the last one to win, right? Because that's the person who's going to take the turn, and then the Time Sifters track again. But what happens if all the Time Sifters are destroyed? And then we go back to normal mode, and we have to actually follow all the things. So our poor editor in the attic was like, he had like a notepad and he had to write down every single person who won in what order and track the entire thing. So just in case the time signature did go away, we would have that. But oh my, this is a hellish card. This is an evil card.
So Krim, you love evil cards and you love Time Sifter. Do you build your decks around this, or do you just like jam it and YOLO it and see what happens?
Okay. So in my chaos deck, I definitely build around this.
Yeah,
but legitimately, do I see me just playing this for the fun of it? No, not really. I mean, it was really Morgan's Time Sifter that I even had to copy.
I just happened to copy it any time.
Yeah. Well, you know, I did. Obviously, I like fun, so I wanted to know what it was going to do. And yeah, so I don't think I would play this generically. Like, I could see me playing Perplexing Chimera. That one's just a fun card.
Yeah.
This one, it's like, this is very specific.
It's very risky. Phil, you play big expensive stuff. Is there any thought of just like, I'm going to play Time Sifter and I get all these expensive cards? No, so I guess
it's so annoying.
Actually, it's a pretty good
deal.
You
can't do this. Nah. I mean, I could just play whatever, Time Stretch or something if I want to lose my friends. This is kind of worse.
Is it though? Because your friends get a crack at it too, right?
They get a chance.
It gives you false hope, Krim. It never actually gives you the turn. I know. Maybe. It just crushes your soul time and time again.
And Time Stretch is 10 mana. Time Sifter is only 5. This is actually very easy to get out. Yeah.
Does it count as gaining extra turns if you have the highest card like 2 or 3 times in a row? Are you banned at bracket 2? Yeah.
I don't know.
Wait, can you have this in bracket 3? Because like I kind of want to just see
what happens. Not a game changer.
I think it would be accepted, but I wouldn't want to play against it anyway.
Everyone builds bracket 1 Time Sifter decks. Let's do that sometime.
I built a budget deck long ago. It was like $40 Joda, the first one that you could play Wooburg instead of paying the casting cost. And I put this in there because the deck scries a lot and the average mana value of the deck was insane. So I played it a couple of times and I won the thing, the extra turns, many, many times. And then I just realized, like, I saw the light go away from everybody's eyes as I did it. And I'm like, oh, okay. Sometimes an optimized option is not necessarily a fun option, and then I took it out.
But this is fun.
You gotta do the finger quotes.
That's the difference. This is super
fun. Good
entertainment
for one time and one time only.
We'll see.
Well, let's move on to a card that you brought up, Phil, that I forgot even existed. Riding the Dooley Horse. It's a 3-mana sorcery that I think was originally like an is it an uncommon? Is it a rare? Oh, it is a rare. But it's a 3-mana sorcery that costs $830 at the moment. This says any one creature gets +2/+2 and gains horsemanship. So horsemanship, already weird. I also think the way I'm reading this card, it's just permanent. Like, is this a permanent +2/+2 and permanent horsemanship with no tracking on it? Phil, why is this card $800 and what makes it so weird?
Okay, so why is it $800? It is not reprinted, and I guess it's... Right?
Oh, it's Portal is 3 it? Kingdom. Yeah, it's the rarest of the Portals. Yeah.
Never got a reprint.
So... The way I found out about it is I just out of interest checked non-reserved list cards and ranked by price, and somehow this is the most expensive. I guess it's a permanent +2/+2 and horsemanship for your commander. It does go away if it changes zones, though, so...
That's not a sticker, Phil. It's not a powerful sticker mechanic.
If it was a horsemanship sticker, I don't know. It's such so weird. Permanent horsemanship. At least it's not bending.
Is this card not good if it wasn't $800? I feel like if you're playing a Voltron deck or something, would you not like... Horsemanship is like unblockable, right? Because there ain't no way your opponent's going to have another thing with horsemanship. That's just not going to happen in 2026 Commander. So 3 mana for permanent unblockable and +2/+2? That doesn't seem that bad to me.
That's the meme, right? I feel like everyone's always like, haha, ride the Dailu horse or whatever, like with infect and yada yada yada. But like, no. This is not a good card.
It's very good in Voltron. What? It's +2/+2 and amazing
evasion.
I can't
get over it. No, man. This thing's like $1 million and on top of that. Like,
I mean, the price kills it.
No, it's not worth buying it. But like, first of all, I think it's only a matter of time more they do reprint it, because like, They reprinted like capture of something something. It's a extra turn spell from also Portal 3 Kingdoms. Sorcery. Not reserve list. And
sorcery, guys. It's sorcery.
Yeah. Sorcery Whatever. Is crazy. Yeah.
And but yeah,
this
the price
is
tanked.
So bad.
This
Come
one
on,
gets reprinted.
Be serious. This is a three
it's
mana
permanent
sorcery.
Plus
give it
two plus
like an enchantment that doesn't get destroyed by enchantment removal. It's kind of like essentially what it is.
It basically says can't be blocked, right? Plus two can't be blocked for three mana for the rest. As long as it's on the battlefield, like, yeah, I think that's
I've put
that's
a
playable.
Whisper Silk cloak on my creature before. This seems kind
whisper
of efficient.
Whisper Silk you can keep doing.
Yeah, that's
but this is three. That would be like five to do it to cast and equip.
Yes, but at least I get to keep doing it. This is like a one-off, and it's sorcery speed.
But
guys.
It's so
no,
funny.
This is not good.
How many times do you play with horsemanship?
Yeah. I spent $800 for this.
This will teach him.
I guess we should, while we shout out horsemanship, we should also shout out banding because there's no banding card here. We talked about banding a bunch of times. It's, I don't know, we still don't really understand it, so maybe we're not.
It's very
the ones
easy.
To talk about.
I have one in my changeling deck. You played against it. That's great.
I still remember this was years ago. I played against a banding deck, and I want to say it was SCG Con New Jersey or something, and maybe it was a Magic Con in New Jersey, I don't remember, someplace in New Jersey, but someone actually had a banding deck, and it was actually hilarious, and it kind of worked, and it had neat synergies. I don't remember your name. If you're listening, send me your banding deck list, and maybe I'll play it on Commander Clash, because we could use some more banding. Banding is, like, one of the weirdest mechanics ever made, so.
I agree. Hard agree. Bring it back.
Bring it back,
it's not even that difficult, honestly.
They should have put in Foundations, really. All right, let's keep moving. Let's keep moving on. Oh, this one. This one I always want to put in my decks, and I never do because I'm afraid it's going to backfire, but it seems so funny in Commander. Zur's Weirding. 4 mana, blue enchantment. It says, players play with their hands revealed, which we've already seen be pretty hilarious on Commander Clash. And then if a player would draw a card, he or she reveals it instead, then any other player may pay 2 life. If a player does, put the card in the graveyard. Otherwise, the player draws that card. So essentially, once it's on the battlefield, anyone can pay 2 life to deny anyone from drawing their card for the turn. So it seems funny in a 40-life format. You play this. If your opponent's going to draw a bomb, you're like, oh, I'll pay the 2 life. You don't get your bomb. But I imagine that once you play this, what actually happens is just like no one draws meaningful cards for a very long time because someone's going to pay the life, and then everyone gets low on life, and then you play a real game of Magic.
Down to a crawl. It's like, oh, you can get the land. Sure. Oh, but you want to draw extra cards? No. We're gonna put that in the bin.
What are you talking about?
That goes to the graveyard, too. Reanimation to get that back? No. That goes to the graveyard, too. It's like, God.
It's almost, it's by like, definition, the opposite of fun.
It's like everyone's playing Lantern Control once this comes down. Everyone's just playing Lantern, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I play this in a group bug, so.
Wait, you play it in group bug?
It's group bug. The whole point of the deck is to save everyone's lives, like, unless you're Tomer and you have like no creatures and you never like attack with anything. Because no big deal. That's for a later down the line. But yeah.
What
but the main thing is, I play a group hug deck that is all Spider-Man. Right, it's got Spider-Man on the front, and it's about trying to save everyone. So you have the fog and keep everybody at the table alive.
Is that the latest episode? I haven't checked it yet, but
yeah,
I played Spider-Man in group hug.
There is in our group hug. Everybody plays group hug. It is that deck, but I had to modify that because it's kind of pointless. Why do I need like fogs? My deck is loaded with fogs because we're all group hug, right? So I modified my paper deck. The base version of that does have Zur's Wielding because it's such a funny card. It's so bad. And I don't do anything to try to stack you out. It's just very funny to have everybody at the table.
The only way you gotta treat this like worst fears. Like, you know how Seth casts worst fears? No. Like, ah, damn, yeah. Puppet sets.
Yeah.
Everybody at the table has to agree. The Zur's Weirding guy, we're all going to let everybody draw cards, and it's the Zur's Weirding guy who's going to have to pay the life because, you know, they can't do it too much. You know, they get to die maybe like 10 cards.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then we get him. And then and we, each, them, we punish them.
You each take turns making sure they also don't draw a card, right? Like whoever plays it, you just got to take turns being like, you never get to draw.
You totally can flip the table on them, just like we've seen with Worst Fears. Like, deal a card that you got to have a silver tongue to make sure everybody's actually playing the game properly. That's, for your enjoyment.
You gotta say though, the problem with this is players play with their hand revealed, so you kind of, it's kind of objectively correct to not give somebody a card. Like if they give you the second Kiki Jiki piece, it's like
if somebody's notably about to win,
not gonna get that. But
if they're not, you just take out the Zerg guy.
That's the reason I never put
it
in the deck.
Engine where if you mill them, then you've only just taken two, and they put it to hand.
Yeah,
what if you have this and a chain of Mephistopheles on the battlefield?
The chain doesn't trigger, right? Because this is a replacement effect.
Oh,
is it not draw?
Yeah.
Otherwise, that player draws a card.
I think they still draw the card, so then you rummage instead. But if you have no cards in hand,
but
then
you
get milled. And then I don't even know. It's too much for my little brain.
then you mutate
on it. And all right, last card of the podcast. And we couldn't go without this card because I actually won a game of Commander Clash back in the Moto era with this card. And that's one of my proudest achievements in Commander. And that card is Goblin Game. So Goblin Game, it is a 7-mana sorcery. It says each player hides at least one object. Then all players reveal them simultaneously. Each player loses life equal to the number of objects that he or she revealed. That player who revealed the fewest objects, then loses half of their life rounded up. If two or more players are tied for the fewest objects, they each lose half of their life rounded up. I love this card. I love because it starts by saying objects, so it doesn't even define what you're supposed to hide. So it seems like you should just kind of run around the room and like grab, you know, here's a shoe, here's a book, I got some cards here, and just start hiding stuff. And then you got to reveal them all at the same. But it doesn't really do much of anything. Have you guys ever played with this card? Like, is there any actual uses for this other than? I mean, I just played it because I wanted to say I won with Goblin Game, and somehow it ended up working out that it actually mattered. But like, are there any actual uses for this card other than being haha, I won with Goblin Game?
Have you
this
seen
a burn
the
card?
No,
yeah, this is a sweet burn card.
Half your life. It's half your life.
Yeah. Yeah, this is so sick. I mean, this is like peak Commander nonsense, right?
This in like Prisoner's Dilemma. We're getting a lot of weird red burn spells now. Maybe we got to build some sort of weird chaos burn deck where we just put all these like silly burn spells together and see what happens. That'd actually be
a fun
deck. I hate
that it's life loss. It should be damage. That would
be.
So
you can double it or triple it.
Break.
So because then you're red, you get to, double it. But it's also funny the errata, the errata for it actually explains the items. It says, when it comes to choice of items, use common sense. Items should be small enough to hide, but large enough to count. Make it clear what kind of object you are hiding beforehand. For example, one player may choose coins, another may choose dice. If you can't find something convenient to hide, write numbers on a piece of paper and reveal the numbers. Make sure the numbers are unambiguous. For example, underline a 6 or a 9 so it can't be missed.
Whenever I see a ruling like that, it reminds me, I don't know if you've ever seen, like, you look up on, like, the internet or whatever, like, weird laws that still exist in different states or countries, and there are these laws that were passed, like, hundreds of years ago that, like, your donkey can't walk on the sidewalk on Saturdays or something, and it's like, someone must have, like, walked their donkey on the sidewalk on a Saturday to make them make the law. So do you think people had an issue, like, hiding ridiculous things with Goblin Game that WotC had
in
to, like, send their intern to, like, write?
In tournament play, you write down 6, and
note.
Then before you reveal it, it's like, no, actually, I wrote 9.
Got him.
8? I was actually infinity. I lose.
Okay. Item. Is it the only? It's got to be the only card that references an item, right?
Yeah, or object.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Realistically, people just put a number and they hide it.
It's so much boring.
I feel like Mark Rosewater definitely designed this card. And it looks like, I can't put it in my Unfinity set, so boom.
I feel like this predates Unsets, and then Unsets came out a little bit after, maybe.
Yeah,
so I wonder if this
like
is
the forerunner of designs over here with a silver border.
Yes, here, Mark, yes. Why don't you go over here and make an Unset? Anyway, I think those are our weird cards, so We've played some of them. We haven't played with some of them. Let us know if you ever played with these cards. Are there any super weird but still maybe kind of useful in Commander cards that we didn't talk about? Let us know about your favorites in the comments. And we'll be back next week to talk some more Commanders. So until then, have an amazing week, everyone. And this is a crew signing off.